Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Sound of poor innocent animals. Animals that are slaughtered by the millions every day in the most horrendous conditions imaginable. Barbaric slaughtering techniques. Barbaric techniques for raising animals that need to be changed in a civilized society. Turn off the sound, please. This is the Savage Nation. Now, we all know about the main event, which is obvious, and we're not going to talk about it much. McCain-Obama battle. We know that Obama is an illegitimate candidate in the sense that he's receiving money from abroad. He's receiving money from foreigners, totally illegal. He has voters who are registered who are dead. He's spending $230 million on TV buys to brainwash you with a propaganda campaign never before seen in American history. He has affiliations with terrorists. He has affiliations with America, white-hating preachers. He has affiliations with cop killers. And yet the media is in his pocket. But we're not going to talk about that as much as we're going to talk about several other issues on the ballot that you must know about. Now, in the state of California, which leads both for the good and the bad in many ways politically, there's a ballot initiative on homosexual marriage that is more important than you could imagine. It's called Proposition 8, and you must vote yes if you're sane. If you're insane, hate the family, hate man and woman, hate your mother and father, hate the Bible, hate the church, and hate the synagogue. Of course, you're in favor of no on Proposition 8, which is where most of the Democrat politicians are because they are exactly what you think they are. I'm going to start with reading from Genesis, and one paragraph, please indulge me. We're talking about the flood of Noah, the myth of the flood of Noah, where God orders Noah to build an ark and to put on this ark every living thing of all flesh, two of every sort, shalt thou bring into the ark to keep them alive with thee. They shall be male and female. What happens to a civilization when even a basic concept of male and female is distorted is what you have today, not only in California, but in the rest of America. We have a completely insane America, a totally insane America that would equate the marriage between a man and a man or a woman and a woman with that of the same teachings going back to biblical times, a part of every culture, every tradition, every society, a part of common sense, a part of natural law, completely distorted by certain elements in this society that have altered their minds to the extent that they think everyone else is crazy. But I want to remind you that Blake, the poet of the 19th century, wrote, "The eye that alters, alters all." So clearly it's important you vote yes on this proposition, 8. So that you preserve what little there is of marriage between a man and a woman and do not let the homosexual mafia destroy your children's minds. But in the myth or the story of Noah and Noah's Ark, when God says to Noah, "You shall bring an animal of every type and they shall be male and female," we get to the animals. "Two of every sort shall come unto thee to keep them alive, and thou take unto thee of all food that is eaten and gather it to thee, and it shall be for food for thee and for them." So in other words, God created these animals as food for us, and I'm not denying that. What I'm going to focus on is not the fact that animals are here as food for man. I'm going to talk about how animals are raised and how animals are slaughtered, because it's one thing to raise an animal for food in humane conditions and to slaughter an animal for food under humane conditions, and another thing to raise an animal for food in inhumane conditions and slaughter an animal under inhumane conditions. In California, we have Proposition 2 for the standards for confining farm animals that appeared on the ballot, and I did the absentee ballot, and I, of course, voted for it. And it will create a new state statute that prohibits the confinement of farm animals in a manner that does not allow them to turn around freely, to lie down, to stand up, and fully extend their limbs. Now you say, oh, that's so Democrat, liberal. Well, I don't care what you call it. I don't really care what you call it. I don't like animal cruelty of any kind. This proposed Proposition 2 prohibits the confinement of farm animals in a manner that will allow them to turn around freely, to lie down, to stand up, and fully extend their limbs. And now, of course, the industry doesn't like this because they say it's going to cost a lot of money. The cost of eggs is going to go up and veal will go up. But I think Proposition 2 prevents cruelty to animals since it's simply wrong to confine animals in tiny cages barely large enough for their bodies. And Proposition 2 supporters released a video that, according to the LA Times, shows egg-laying hens crammed into filthy cages while nearby discarded birds are left to die in piles of corpses. I believe not only is it humane to raise an animal in these manners, but it also will probably produce better food and healthier food. There are many things we could talk about today. We could talk about this, and I want to talk about this. California Proposition 2, the standards for confining farm animals. I voted yes on Proposition 2. It will create a new state statute that prohibits the confinement of farm animals in a manner that will let them stand up in a cage or lie down in a cage, or if they're birds, extend their wings. I'd like to know your feelings on this particular proposition, and we can discuss that. I now want to go into the issue related to it directly on the slaughter of animals, which is not contained in this proposition, although I think it's worthy of a proposition unto itself, and I'll probably help the Humane Society and any other group get this on a California ballot, maybe a ballot in another state or other states at sometime in the future. And that would be for humane slaughter. I don't know if you've ever been in a slaughterhouse, but I have, and it's something you'll never forget as long as you live. Let's talk about the slaughtering of animals and how it's done without getting you completely grossed out, because I know many of you can't take reality of any kind. You can't take the reality of Obama's Marxism. You cannot take the reality of what it's going to do to your Bill of Rights. So how can you really talk about slaughter, whether it be in Afghanistan or of our troops who are trying to fight for our freedom? You can't understand any of that because you live in a dream world. Everything to you is a joke if you're an extremist liberal. There is a way to kill an animal humanely, and I'm going to focus for a moment on the Jewish ritual slaughtering laws, because many people think that the so-called kosher food laws were written strictly for health and the health of man. Now, there's no question in my mind that they were written originally for the health of man. For example, outlawing the eating of pig in the Middle East 5,000 years ago probably made sense in the sense that the conditions under which pigs lived and were slaughtered and raised and preserved, rather, were such that trichinosis was probably quite common. And other illnesses associated with pork were certainly more prevalent than they would be today with modern methods of slaughter and of preservation. However, I read a paper 25 years ago on the kosher food laws, in which it was argued that the kosher food laws were as much about humane slaughtering as they were about health for the human being humans who were going to eat that animal. Now, what did the writer mean by that? He meant that if you actually read some of the Hebrew, the animal is supposed to be slaughtered with a certain kind of knife that is sharp, not with a dull knife, because a dull knife will take longer to kill the animal. An animal is supposed to be killed quickly, not slowly. And so if you look at these rules written 5,000 years ago by the ancient Israelites, you will see that there was a humane element even in the rules on the slaughter of animals. And yet today I believe that we've fallen below the men of 5,000 years ago with regard to the raising of animals and the slaughter of animals. And that's why I say I am totally in favor of California Proposition 2, the standards for confining farm animals. If you want to comment on this proposition in California or around America, because this show, as you well know, is not limited to California. It's a national show on a couple of hundred, 350 or more stations. I don't keep count. The third largest show in America in radio, 8 to 10 million listeners, probably much more. with an associated website, michaelsavage.com, the phone number being 1-800-449-8255. I'll take your calls the minute I come back right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
And God said, let us make man in our image after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air and over the cattle and over all the earth and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. I guess he was referring to the liberal. And God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them. And God blessed them, and God said unto them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the flesh of the sea and over the fowl of the air, and over every living thing that creepeth upon the earth. And then God said, behold, I have given you every herb yielding seed which is upon the face of all the earth, and on every tree, and to every beast of the earth, and to every fowl of the air, and to everything that creepeth upon the earth. I guess he means the liberal. Wherein there is a living soul, I guess he doesn't mean the liberal, I have given every green herb for food. And there it is. And so God creates the animals for man to subdue. And with the exceptions that are listed in the Old Testament, which are not limited to, but does include the pig, man is able to eat any of these animals. So we're not arguing over whether or not we shall eat an animal. In fact, I've told you this for years on the Savage Nation, that physiologically man is designed to be an omnivore, which is part herbivore and part carnivore, meaning you have the teeth and the physiology for tearing flesh in the form of your canine teeth. I don't care whether you're a vegetarian, that's your decision, but you are physiologically evolved to be an omnivore. Just take the thumbs, and how many times do I have to tell you, put them against the sharp teeth coming down from the top, the sharp teeth coming up from the bottom. There are four. They're called canines. You're made for tearing flesh, but not solely for tearing flesh. You have the grinding teeth in the back. You have a mid-length gut. So you're made for both animal and plant food. You're an omnivore. It doesn't mean you can't live on pure vegetarian food. Unfortunately, many of the girls who are vegetarians are emaciated inside and out. They don't understand. They're not getting sufficient nutrients. They cannot get sufficient nutrients from vegetables alone unless they supplement their diet or they know specifically how to mix their diet. That is why many of them are very nervous. That's why many vegetarians have many physiological problems they're not aware of. And I don't want to go into vegetarianism. I want to stick to the strict issue of politics. The Proposition 2 on the ballot in California calls for the humane standard for confining farm animals. It will create a new statute that prohibits the confinement of farm animals in certain ways and lets them lie down, stand up freely, and walk around in their cages. And I'm for it. I'm 100% for it, and I voted for it. And I know many of you say, how could you be for it? That's a touchy-feely liberal thing. Well, if being humane is a touchy-feely liberal thing, then you could call me a touchy-feely liberal on this issue because I don't care. This is what being an independent means. It means analyzing each and every political issue as it comes to you without putting up your finger in the wind and saying, what do conservatives think? Here's what I think. Here's what I think. This is how you raise animals, and you slaughter them humanely as well. So if you want to talk about this, go ahead. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. I believe this is a great topic. I think it's a super topic. Scott and Modesto, quickly go ahead. You're against Proposition 2. Explain why.
This law is going to open our border to Mexico. It's not going to stop the treatment of animals. Just will move that problem to Mexico. The law does other things. It allows animals access to outdoors, which increases, like in chickens, avian influenza.
Well, wait. It doesn't say that chickens have to be raised outdoors. It says they have to be raised in larger cages.
They have to have access to the outdoors for some parts of the day. It also, I don't know, if you've ever been to a chicken house, they have ample room. Maybe they're transported in trucks, but they have ample
room. No, they don't have ample room. In fact, the practice of confining chickens in small confining cages is quite common. In fact, the chickens can't extend their wings at all. You say, who cares about a chicken? Well, look, the issue is not only the animal itself. The issue is the human beings themselves. And I believe that humane treatment of animals makes us more humane as people. How else can I put it to you? It's as simple as that. So you want to talk about that? Go ahead. I mean, I'm a strange mixture of things. And in that sense, you may not know what to expect from me on each issue, but there it is. What else can I say to you? Utah, Kevin, you're up on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, I just wanted to tell you, I got your book in the mail today, and the only reason I ordered it was for the chapter, My Silent Brother. That was my first introduction when you were talking about your brother. And the last two sentences just tell me everything I need to know about you, Doc. You're a great guy.
That's very sweet of you, and I thank you for reading it and understanding who I really am, as opposed to the fools who took the bait that was delivered to them by George Soros and Media Matters. Media Matters being perhaps the most evil Stalinist group in the history of America that has been trying to destroy me from the day I began on radio because of their radical homosexual and socialist agenda. Yeah, you can read My Silent Brother. I don't want to talk about it. But you know what? Maybe I should go there for a minute. Maybe we should go there for a minute without my pulling at your heart strings. If you have anyone in your family who was handicapped, they call it special needs. I can't use such jargon. I have to use the language that I grew up with, or else I lose track of reality. Handicapped, disabled, whatever you want to say about a person. If you have had someone like that in your family and you become emotionally attached to them, it changes you for the rest of your life, usually for the better. I frankly don't know anybody who's had an individual of this type directly in their family who didn't come out a better person. I don't know anyone who became a worse person. That's the funny part about it. I don't know of anyone who's ever been cruel to a handicapped person in their family. I never heard about it. It seems to bring out the goodness in people rather than the evil. So in that sense, my little defenseless brother, born blind and deaf and unable to hold himself up, may have been put on the earth for reasons that I don't really understand. I frankly think, as I said in the story, that he was the Jesus of our family who died for my sins. I don't know how else to put it. But he also made me a different kind of person. I don't know if I'd be at all humane if it wasn't for him. I really don't know. But maybe that's what makes me the person able to talk about the humane treatment of animals. It's a very interesting topic to me, and it's directly related to the bigger political issues of our time, the treatment of animals and the proposition in California on how animals should be raised in cages in a more humane way. It has tremendous ramifications on the society overall, because a more humane society is a better society. Otherwise, we'll descend to the level of the barbaric Islamofascists, who not only treat animals in a way that you can't imagine, but for example, they stoned a woman to death in Somalia because she committed adultery. Now, how could this be permitted on planet Earth at this time? How? Well, how can a lot of things be permitted on planet Earth at this time? The UN is supposed to prevent this kind of behavior from occurring, but what good is the UN? We know the UN is a worthless organization, basically, of degenerate grifters. But we won't spend our time wasting our time, rather, on the UN. We're going to talk about the humane treatment of animals for a few minutes. Well, we can actually make it a bigger picture. As I said to you, the original kosher food laws were certainly about human health to a certain extent, but it's been written that they were about the humane treatment of animals in order to make man a more civilized creature. I don't know if you understand this, but in Middle Eastern wars, when Israelis would capture enemy troops, they were never permitted to kill them. They were never permitted to mutilate their bodies by the laws of the land of Israel. While the Arabs always, in almost every case, would disgrace the corpse of the Jewish soldiers they caught, strictly to torture their enemy. We know many times, for example, Jewish soldiers were caught and tortured publicly. We saw that during one of the wars. And this, of course, is a key distinction between the two peoples and the two sides. There's no question about it. And so This, again, is lost to the American Dumbo, who knows virtually nothing about anything other than pointy shoes and orgasms and sports, I suppose. But I don't address these questions to that audience. I address them to you, the American audience that knows the difference between right and wrong, between good and evil, between a man and a woman getting married, and the mockery of everything sane on the earth, which is a man and a man getting married, or a woman and a woman getting married, which is not only a blasphemy from a biblical point of view, but an insanity from a societal point of view, which is why any religious person on earth with a brain is in favor of protecting heterosexual marriage, or else there's nothing left in the society. And it just bewilders me how the Attorney General of the state of California, Jerry Brown, could so distort the language of Proposition 8 in order to appease the homosexual mafia. It sickens me how a formerly Jesuit man like him could come out on the opposite side of his own teachings, or how so many decent Catholics I know in San Francisco, for political reasons, will support the most abominable twist of reality in order to get ahead politically. But then again, I'm not a politician. I'm a talk show host, and it's only one man's opinion. What's yours? 1-800-449-8255. Derek in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Mike. Listen, I'm all for this proposition. You know, I tell you, you kind of hinted at it before, but it really says a lot about a society by how they treat their animals. And, you know, I get emails once in a while from the Humane Society, and there's usually videos attached. And just the abuse that these videos show. I know, like, one of the videos in particular, I know it's not the United States, but in China, just what they do to the dogs in China, they put them in these cages, and, I mean, they pack them full. You know, where the poor dog's snouts are being pushed out of these cages, and you just look into the eyes of these dogs, and they just look like what are you doing to me? All these dogs want to love. They just want to be loyal.
Yes, the Chinese have the most inhumane treatment of animal on planet Earth. I don't know how they get away with it, because the American moron, again, says nothing about it. The phony American animal rights activists say nothing about the inhumane treatment of animals in China, because they're afraid of going to China and doing anything that may actually cause them harm. They're phonies through and through. For example, they raise St. Bernards in China, I don't know if you know this, from puppyhood in small cages to serve them in soup. Are you aware of that?
No, I wasn't, but you know what? I believe it.
They raise St. Bernards in China in small cages, and then they club them to death rather than killing them humanely while the animal screams in agony, and they club them to death because they consider it better for their taste, those animals over there that eat that. Don't tell me it's a cultural difference. This is an abomination on planet Earth that we permit a society to treat animals that way. You can just imagine what they did to American prisoners during the Korean War, or what they did to American prisoners captured during the Vietnam War, which we don't want to know anything about. Okay, let's leave it at that. Don't get me started. And that's what I'm trying to get at. If they're allowed to continue to treat animals that way in China, you can just imagine what they do to people in China, which, of course, have been swept under the rug in this election. You've heard nothing about the harvesting of human organs in China, have you? Have you heard McCain talk about it, or Obama? Have you heard him say one word, or either of them say one word about China and their treatment of political dissidents and slave labor camps and death camps? No, because they both receive money from corporations that live on trade with China. Don't you get it? How far we've fallen as a nation, that we have two sad sacks like this and we're supposed to get excited about them? Don't you get it? I do. But I want to focus on Proposition 2 in the state of California, because it has deep ramifications, as you can see. As you can see, that if you turn certain things over, it opens up the whole can of worms, if you want to put it in that regard. Renee in Connecticut, you're up on the one and only Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, an absolute pleasure to talk to you, sir.
Thank you.
You're talking about slaughter and what goes on. What we need to push also is to get America's dirty little secret out about horse slaughter. It's been kept quiet. Our horses now are being shipped and put over the border to Mexico and Canada, where the slaughter is beyond barbaric of what we did to them. Right now, our slaughterhouses have been closed down, but we need a bill.
Are you saying they slaughter horses in Canada for food?
Yes, they do. They do it.
Well, who eats horse? Who eats that? The Frenchman? Is that? I'm not trying to be sarcastic. Who eats horse meat in Canada? The French?
Yes, the French do, the Mexicans do, the Belgians do, the Chinese and the Japanese do. Ferdinand, one of the greatest racehorses that won the Kentucky Derby, was sent to Japan to recuperate, and he was slaughtered. Others have been slaughtered. Our horses are slaughtered at more than 100 a day. They're taking over those borders, and the borders are wide open. We have had banning on the double-decker trailers where those horses were put in there at the most horrible way.
You know, it's funny, you know, that we're having this discussion. About 2 years ago, I was in Las Vegas, and I found a little horse magazine. And it was about a donkey, that a little baby donkey that had been left on the side of a road in agony. It had been hit by a truck and left there by the owner. And this big burly rancher, as macho as they come, found this donkey, took it home, spent untold thousands of money, dollars of his own money, to bring that little animal back to life. And many people were touched by the story. Others contributed money. Eventually, the little animal died. But these were tough men. These were not, you know, lightweight guys and all weaklings. You know what I'm getting at? Man doesn't have to be cruel to be tough.
Exactly.
In fact, some of the meanest people on the planet are not tough at all. They're cowards. You know that as well, don't you?
Yes, because I work at a horse rescue. I see it. I know what goes on. All you have to do is go onto the internet and type in horse slaughter. The videos are graphic.
I can't watch them, I'll be honest with you. I mean, I don't find that at all possible to what started this, and thank you for the call, Renee. I was scanning television last night. I guess I shouldn't have. I cooked my scallops. They came out great, thank you. And it took me a long time to cook everything, to manage the eggplant and the scallops and the pasta. And I did it on purpose so I could drink more. That's one of the reasons I like to cook. Unfortunately, I drank too much of the white wine. I got a smashing hangover. But before I fell asleep, I was scanning for some television entertainment, a distraction from Obama, and I stumbled upon perhaps the most horrendous show I've ever seen in my life, with the most least tasteful show in the world, something about world's most disgusting jobs, and I don't watch it. I mean, I'm not interested in seeing a man climb in a sewer. I'm sorry he has to do it. It's his problem. But last night was about men who castrate sheep, and I watched these pig animals, the men, I mean, laughing as they cut the testicles off sheep. And all I could say was, I hope that there's karma in the world. I pray there's karma in the world. And I pray that these men who think that it makes them macho to laugh while they're torturing a poor, defenseless animal who has no way to fight back and cutting the animal's testicles off, I pray to God that karma comes back to them, not only in the next world, but in this. That's all I could think as I turned the show off and fell asleep to my dreams. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com, Chicago. Anna, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I just wanted to say that I don't live in California, but if I did, I would definitely vote yes on that proposition. As a Jewish person myself, I know the rules and mandates that we have in our teachings about the treatment of animals, and that, of course, treatment of human beings is higher, but animals are very close. And that's why in Jewish history we've never had, you know, torturing of animals for sport or entertainment or anything like that, you know, no kind of like they do bullfighting in Spain or other things like that. We've never done things like that because we don't believe that animals should be treated that way.
I understand that, and most Christians in this country say that Israel is a special place and the Jews are a special people. And that's the beautiful part of the story. The good Christians of America understand that Israel should be protected. It is the evil atheists of America who hate Israel and are on the side of the torturers on the other side of the divide, as you well understand. Thanks for the call. What would you like to talk about? I'm not going to do this for 3 hours today, but this is a good start for this hour. Sacramento, Kevin, you're up on the Savage Nation.
Thank you for taking my call, Dr. Savage. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
I lived in the Middle East for a while, and my uncle is a butcher there, and I can tell you the amount of work that goes into the slaughter of animals there. The fact is that you cannot, the knives have to be sharpened, and this is to your kosher topic that you brought up earlier. They do a halal thing. I don't know if you know about that. You cannot.
Yes, I do know about halal, and I know about kosher food laws and halal laws, and the halal laws of the Muslim folks are directly derived from the kosher food laws, which is why people who are interested, who follow the halal laws, will eat kosher food, for example, on an airplane.
And I took my first trip with my uncle when I was 9 years old, and he let me get slaughtered or killed my first animal at 9 years old. However, I thought it was going to be the coolest thing to do. I got hit so many times by my uncle for trying to be cruel or beat the animals or hit them just for fun. My first job was to actually clean after him every time he would slaughter an animal. Before you bring the second animal, the place had to be clean. There was supposed to be no blood. So when that next animal came in, it was a brand new clean floor. The knives were always hidden until the moment of killing the animal. There's only a certain way to cut the throat where you had to go down once and up once, and you can't just sit there trying to kill this animal in a brutal way. So there's a lot into it than just killing the animals. I mean, they're trying to be really, really, I mean.
Right. Well, that's, yeah, I understand it derived from the laws, the laws of God passed down to the Jews in how to slaughter an animal. The kosher food laws have a lot to say about that. Thank you for the call. Well, there are certain things that both cultures, both Muslim and Jewish, agree upon, and one of them is food and the slaughter of animals, that's for sure. But here in America, you know, we're disconnected from animals, from the raising of animals, from the killing of animals, from the treatment of animals. We have no idea what goes on, and that's why I think Proposition 2, the standards for confining farm animals, is an important one for California and for America. It's that simple. Now, I understand this is sort of counterintuitive for many of you who think that I'd normally be against this proposition, because if you look at the sponsors of Proposition 2, which I voted yes on, they are all people who politically I disagree with on everything. For example, the Sierra Club, we know they're a left-wing fanatical group, disconnected from the environment in almost every way. The Center for the Science of the Public Interest, we know, is run by completely insane leftists, in my opinion. The Union of Concerned Scientists, all socialist whack jobs. The United Farm Workers, socialist left-wingers. The Cesar Chavez Foundation, socialist left-wing organization. These other social justice so-called organizations are all in favor of yes on two. It doesn't mean, therefore, I have to oppose it. See, that's what distinguishes me from a liberal. I don't really care who supports something I believe in. What I care about is whether it makes sense for me and the nation. And that is why when President Bush tried to force the takeover of the security of our ports on us by the Dubai ports people, I didn't care that it came from Bush. I knew that it was totally wrong. I knew that it was insane to turn over the security of our ports to these people from Dubai. And I then joined people on the left, such as Charles Schumer, who came on the show, who I politically actually am nauseated by. I think Charles Schumer is one of the, well, let's just say I'm nauseated by him politically. Let's leave it at that. But it didn't matter. Politics makes strange bedfellows. Now, of course, I would hope that some of these far-left groups would understand that they may agree with me on certain things and they would support me. But I know better, because I've come to understand that groups such as these, the Sierra Club, the Center for the Science and Public Interest, the Union of Concerned Scientists, the United Farm Workers, these are party-line organizations. They vote the way the far-left votes on every issue, without regard to what they may personally believe. And so I don't expect any support from groups like this. I can guarantee you every one of those groups is voting against the proposition that would save marriage. You understand that? Because they're didactic automatons when it comes to politics. Well, that's where I distinguish myself, and that's where I take some self-satisfaction from, in understanding that each issue itself is worthy of our attention and our real thinking. I'll be right back. Savage. Well, we're talking about Proposition 2 in California on animal cruelty. I want to move on to a story that just popped up from England found in a rundown Boston housing project, Barack Obama's aunt, Zaytuna Onyango. And it goes like this. Barack Obama has lived one version of the American dream that has taken him to the steps of the White House, but a few miles from where the Democratic presidential candidate studied at Harvard, his Kenyan aunt and uncle, immigrants living in modest circumstances in Boston, have a contrasting American story. Zaytuna Onyango, the aunt so affectionately described in Obama's best-selling memoir, lives in a disabled access flat in a rundown public housing estate in South Boston. A second relative, believed to be the long-lost Uncle Omar, described in B.O.'s book, was beaten by armed robbers with a sawed-off rifle while working in a corner shop in the Dorchester area of Boston. He was later evicted from his one-bedroom apartment for failing to pay $2,300 arrears, according to the Boston Housing Court. The U.S. press has repeatedly rehearsed Obama's extraordinary odyssey, but the other side of the family's American experience has only been revealed in parts. Just across town from where Obama made history as the first black president of the Harvard Law Review, some of his closest blood relatives have confronted the harshness of immigrant life in America. Now, I don't really know what to make of this story. So he has a relative from Kenya who's poor. So what? Is that his fault? I mean, is he supposed to take care of his aunt? I mean, I don't get it. I don't see how this is going to work. I mean, if I were his campaign advisor, I'd work it for me. I'd say this is why we need income redistribution so my aunt could live a better life. That's why we need communism. So that's why you liberals should understand that when Obama should become president, God forbid, maybe his aunt will be given your house in Boston. Because if you're a white liberal, the first thing you should do is give away your house to an immigrant from Kenya in order to show that you really care. In order to show that you really want change, you should take your homes in your liberal area and give them to any immigrant that is required by the government. And you should go live in a housing project. In order to be a good liberal, you've got to be a good liberal. And in order to be a good liberal, not just a talking liberal, you've got to live it. You've got to talk the talk and walk the walk. You've got to give away your property to immigrants. Now, whether you want to or not, I think is irrelevant. What's important is that you'll be forced to do it under Barack Obama's trickle-up poverty scheme. But that's a long way off. You can't think that far ahead. If you could, you'd understand that you're actually walking on the edge of a cliff in your blind support for this harlequin called B.O. So get ready, folks. Dr. Zhivago is just around the corner.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
All right, welcome to or welcome back to the Savage Nation. I spent the first hour talking about a proposition in the state of California that may be national at some point, which is the treatment of animals and how they're raised, Proposition 2, which I voted yes on, to give animals a more humane treatment while they're alive. And then we went on from that to politics and things of that nature. But, you know, I got to go back to it in one way with regard to Obama and McCain, Republican and Democrat, liberal and conservative. You know, if you scratch the surface of what the conservatives fear the most in this country with the arrival on the scene of a socialist government, frankly, it's all about the inhumane treatment of themselves and their families from an all-intrusive or overbearing government. What I mean by that is all the freedoms that we enjoy as Americans that are guaranteed in our Constitution, Many of these freedoms, let's start with freedom of speech, will be taken away by Obama and his minions because they've said they'll do it. Nancy Pelosi has said she wants to curtail free speech. She wants to redefine what is hate speech. In other words, anything a liberal finds offensive is hate speech, and they will curtail it. So is that a humane thing to do? Who is it humane for? Well, it's humane if you're a homosexual radical who wants to rewrite human history and rewrite the mindset of every American and force them to accept what they know to be wrong. Then it's humane for you. And, of course, you have access to Nancy Pelosi. You have access to all of the left-wing politicians. But the fact of the matter is religious Americans and even fair-minded family people don't want their children brainwashed with homosexual propaganda, and they don't want a government forcing them to accept it. So you have situations like this where gays have made themselves appear to be the oppressed minority who are being exploited by an overbearing society when the exact opposite is true. It's the straight society that is being subjected to a form of terrorism by the homosexual lobby. And you'll understand this only if you're a parent. Let's go to the next level. Let's go to the minority. Let's go to the immigrant. We are told that the immigrant, particularly the illegal immigrant in America, is an oppressed minority, and that we owe them a certain standard of education. We owe them a certain standard of medication. When in fact, we don't owe them anything. They're here illegally. They snuck into our country. The lifeboat is flooded. And yet, because these pressure groups own the politicians, particularly the Democrats, many Republicans, unfortunately, as well, the average American conservative fears they will be forced by an overbearing government to provide services to illegal aliens that they're not entitled to, and it will come out of their hide, and their services will diminish as well. And you can go right down the list, and you can see why conservatives are rightly concerned about the arrival on the scene of a naked Marxist like Obama, no matter what he says. It doesn't matter what he says. Do you understand it doesn't matter what the man says? He's a liar because he's a politician like all of them. Do you comprehend it doesn't matter what Obama says? He's a liar. Take it from me. He's a liar. He's another politician like all the rest of them. Therefore, ipso facto, he's a liar. U.S. Representative Marcy Kaptur, one of the most left-wing fanatics from Ohio, a Democrat, whipped the crowd up before Obama took the stage, telling them that America needed a second Bill of Rights guaranteeing all Americans a job, health care, homes, an education, and a fair playing field for business and farmers. Well, Mark Steen writes, Article 40 of the Citizens of the ex-Soviet Union says, citizens of the USSR have the right to work, that is, to guaranteed employment and pay in accordance with the quantity and quality of their work, and not below the state-established minimum, including the right to choose their trade or profession, type of job and work in accordance with their inclinations, abilities, training, and education with due account of the needs of society. That's from the ex-Soviet Union. Article 41 of the ex-Soviet Union says, citizens of the USSR have the right to rest and leisure. The length of collective farmers working in leisure time is established by their collective farms. Article 42 of the ex-Soviet Union says, citizens of the USSR have the right to health protection. So here we have the Obama wing of the Democrat Party outright mimicking the ex-Soviet Union's protocols, and the American people don't even understand what is at stake. They don't understand we're about to become the United Soviet States of America, the USS of A. I have another story that just came up that went up to michaelsavage.com. Ivory from 10,000 elephants on sale amid fears of new slaughter. Conservationists are dismayed that a total of 108 tons of ivory will be auctioned to Far Eastern buyers, the equivalent of 10,000 dead elephants. Ivory went on sale legally yesterday for the first time in almost 10 years when the southern African nation of Namibia auctioned 7 tons of elephant tusks exclusively to Chinese and Japanese buyers. The much-criticized sale, which raised $1.18 million, heralded 2 weeks of rolling auctions that will put 108 tons of ivory, the equivalent of more than 10,000 dead elephants, under the hammer in a one-off sale to the Far East, where the product is used mainly in traditional medicines and for official seals to stamp formal documents. Wildlife groups and other African nations fear that the controversial sell-off could breathe life back into the ivory trade, banned in 1989, and trigger a resurgence of the poaching that devastated Africa's elephant populations in the 70s and the 80s. Now, this is an important story because elephants are amongst the most caring and loving animals on this planet. And any human who slaughters an elephant, in my opinion, should be gutted and tribute money to elephant rescue organizations and elephant care organizations. One of the animals on the earth I cannot understand how we permit the slaughter of. I don't understand this. I don't understand a lot of things. But I also know the UN is the most corrupt organization the world has ever seen. It makes the League of Nations look like a humane organization, which it was not. How is it this possible? How could these auctions be possible? Because after Namibia, it will move every 3 days through Botswana, Zimbabwe, and South Africa, which plans to sell a record of 53 tons of ivory. So there it goes. No sale since 1989, actually first since 1999, was approved in principle in 2002 in The Hague, the Center for Child Pornography in the World. So if you think that world government is necessarily free of corruption, and if you think that world government is humane, I would invite you to read this article on the first sale in 10 years of the sale of ivory. 10,000 elephants on sale amid fears of new slaughter. Approved, by the way, by the child perverts, the child molesters in The Hague, who would like to give us a new world government. Phone number 1-800-449-8255. When I come back on the Savage Nation, I will play again my endorsement of John McCain, which has moved his poll numbers up 2 points and moved Obama down 1 point. Just as I stopped through you, the American listener of the Savage Nation, the Dubai Ports deal, the appointment of Harriet Myers to the Supreme Court, the sellout by John McCain and Kennedy to the illegal alien pressure groups with the so-called Reform Act, which would have granted amnesty to them. It was you who stopped all of that, and it is you who I am motivating to stop Obama before we see a Marxist takeover of this country the minute I come back right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Well, there's nothing else to explain the turnaround of McCain other than this audience. You know, I don't expect the mainstream media to acknowledge that because they never have and they never will. But all I care about is that my audience understand their power. And there's nothing else to explain the sudden turnaround of him surging and Obama falling. Now, this may change again, particularly after Obama spends tonight in front of the American people with the greatest propaganda campaign in American history. It's unheard of. $650 million? Where did it come from? It's astounding. Palestinian phoning U.S. idiots for Obama from the Gaza Strip to vote for Obama. That's legal? What's legal and illegal in America anymore is such a blur nobody knows. We know that there have been $10 billion set aside for bonuses on Wall Street, for the fools who bankrupted Lehman Brothers, for the criminals who were left on Wall Street. Your money, the bailout money, is being used to pay them $10 billion in bonuses. Read it on michaelsavage.com and puke. Puke that we have such a corrupt government. Puke that we have a Treasury Secretary that hasn't been let out in handcuffs for stealing your money like this. So now let's play the McCain endorsement. I intended not to endorse anyone for this election prior to this week. But the more I have learned about Obama, the more I realize I cannot sit on the sidelines. And so I have to officially say, and sadly so, that I am going to endorse John McCain for whatever it's worth. You may say, oh, who listens to that guy, Savage? What does an endorsement from him mean? It means more than you may imagine. It means much more than you may imagine. An endorsement from Michael Savage means more than an endorsement from Newsday, the Chicago Tribune, the New York Post, the Daily News, the Los Angeles Times, the Star Ledger, the Plain Dealer, the Detroit Free Press, the Oregonian, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, the San Diego Union-Tribune, the Sacramento Bee. Michael Savage's daily circulation is larger than any one of these newspapers. I have millions of listeners, most of whom, by the way, are independents. In case you don't know it, they're not all conservative. Most of my audience are independents, and they've been waiting for some kind of signal as to which way to go. They despise what Bush has done to this country as much as you do, as much as I do. And I've said so. I've been the harshest critic of Bush imaginable. And I understand that John McCain is really not that much different in so many ways that it's very hard to endorse him. I don't care whether he comes on this show or not. It wouldn't do a thing for my ratings. Remember, what is a rating in radio? A one-show rating jump means nothing. This is a grueling, grueling long-term business. It occurs over a long, long period of time. So a spike in a listenership for a day means next to nothing. He's been on shows that aren't one-tenth the size of mine, and no one knows who these shows are. And I have to put my own ego aside, and I have to say what's best for America. I'll take my chances with the old warhorse, and even Sarah Palin, who I'm not a big fan of, by the way, over this naked Marxist revolutionary, because I don't want to see what the next Pol Pot's liable to do to the world. So there was the endorsement that changed the campaign. It could alter American history for the better, and I hope it does. We just might be able to save this country's disastrous experiment with socialism. New York City, WOR. Susan, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, you are an American hero. We love you. That endorsement is already turning the numbers around, and you're going to save this country.
Well, I'd like to believe that's true. I have no way to verify it directly, but I just using common sense and logic, the day after I endorsed McCain, he went up 2 points and Obama went down. Now, what else happened? Nothing. Nothing.
Well, hearing the reports here in New York on the radio that the numbers are changing in McCain's favor, and I know that it's what you did, and please keep doing what you're doing.
Well, I am. We're fighting for the survival of the American way of life that we have all come to live with for better or for worse. We do not need a man who has spent his entire life courting Marxists, America haters. He says, I think structural lesbians is how he put it. He liked structural lesbians, whatever that means. I never met a structural lesbian, so I don't know what they are. But he said he always, Obama said that he tended towards the radical socialist professors and structural lesbians. Can anyone tell me what a structural lesbian is? I'd be interested. I don't even want to be sarcastic. What's the distinction between a lesbian and a structural lesbian? Oh, I think I can figure it out. In other words, a lesbian is a woman who likes women and may or may not be political. It's her business. It's her orientation, and I agree with that. A structural lesbian would be a lesbian who wants to use her sex as a weapon. A sexual orientation as a weapon. So then we can then say that there are homosexuals and structural homosexuals. A homosexual will be a man who likes men, and it's his business, because I'm a sexual libertarian myself, and I really don't care what the next man does as long as it doesn't impact children. But a structural homosexual will be someone who wants to alter society, i.e. the structure of society. Ah, thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you, Obama, for introducing me to the dialectic of the revolutionary socialist. 1-800-449-8255. Can we move away from animals and animal farming? I want to talk only about politics now. Let me go down my website on michaelsavage.com because it's becoming really a fun place for me to go. Here we go. Florida Sun Sentinel. Florida voting rolls contain dead duplicates and felons. The Sun Sentinel found more than 65,000 ineligible and duplicate voters on Florida's registration rolls. Need I ask, most of them are in the camp of the Harlequin Obama. Obama accepting untraceable donations. Trickle-up poverty, the new economics of Obama. Ex-Acorn staffer says Obama camp gave group a donor list. What Martin Luther King called evil, Barack Obama calls good. This is interesting. That's from Clennard Childress. What Martin Luther King called evil, Barack Obama calls good. I didn't see that one. Here's one from the Wall Street Journal on michaelsavage.com where you can order psychological nudity, and I suggest you do if you want it for the holidays. The rich support McCain, but the super rich support Obama. Wow. That's an interesting twist. I think I'll look at that article with you right now. The super rich support Obama. Now, I've analyzed this. Why would the super rich support Obama? Do they want to pay more taxes? And I thought about this in great detail. It says voters worth between $1 million and $10 million are favoring McCain, while voters worth $30 million or more are favoring Obama. Now, how in the world could anyone with $30 million or more want to pay more taxes? It's counter-logical, and I figured out how, what it is. The super rich get inside tips from the Democrats, which enable them to become richer. The super rich know where to put their money before the rich do. That's why they want an outright socialist
Savage.
In office. We are moving away from the humane treatment of animals to the humane treatment of American taxpayers. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. And before I take your calls on any topic, and we can talk about anything on the show today, I want to talk about taxes for less than 2 minutes. We keep hearing from the liars in the media, notably Peter Jennings and Tom Brokaw, two of the old vaudevillians in the news business, that the poor are being exploited by the tax structure today, and under Obama, it'll be the reverse. Well, if you actually look at the IRS statistics, what you find out is that 1/20th of the taxpayers pay more than half of all taxes. Only half of taxpayers are paying virtually all the taxes collected in the country. So in other words, the top 50% of earners are working for or being exploited by the bottom 50%. The top 1% of taxpayers pays 37% of the taxes collected in the country. The top 1% of taxpayers, which would include everybody in the media in a on a national level, pay 37% of the taxes collected in this country. The top 5% pays 56% of all taxes. The top 50% of earners pays 96% of all taxes. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? Okay, let's go to the caller. San Francisco, KNEW. Al, go ahead, please.
Yeah. Obama's support of homosexual marriage, I don't like, and the false contention they don't discriminate, i.e., there are black groups, Latino groups, Asian groups, Arab groups segregated within the homosexual communities, black lesbian-only groups, and the media has locked out groups of former homosexuals. So don't equate their lifestyle with my immutable characteristic, black. And also, it really hurts me that black...
Whoa, you're accusing me of doing that?
Of course not.
Oh.
Cousin Mike, of course not. And also, it really pains me that black preachers who only a few years ago were claiming that they love the sinner but hate the sin and were quoting Leviticus, all of a sudden are for homosexual marriage. I think if anyone investigates, which the mass media won't do, you'll find that they're on the DNC payroll or the payroll of some leftist white group. And I'm
I don't know what they are, but Al, let me ask you something. I'm not of African-American heritage, and you are. In your community, man in the street, are they for or against gay marriage?
Most are against, but people don't realize, for example, the local NAACP really consists of like 3 or 4 members and an answering machine. The mainstream media won't tell you that. And if I contact them, and I have, and ask them, well, what are you going to do about the pathetic black men in San Francisco, for example, who are slobbering on themselves and mudding to themselves and don't shave? They don't respond. But they're willing to jump into this.
But I'm asking about the average person in your community, assuming you live in a community where there are more African-Americans than in my community, the women, for example. Do the women really support gay marriage in the black community? I don't believe so.
But more women do. Because they have a different outlook on life than black men who suffer the most racism and discrimination. I walk in businesses all the time, and I see a token black female or two, and you don't see black men. And black men are not speaking up on these issues, and they're willing to jump into the fight to support.
Here's the problem. When any Newsom, the clownish mayor of San Francisco, destroyed his political future by coming out for homosexual marriage several years ago and surrounding himself primarily by homosexuals in the mayor's office, which is what he does. Almost all of his staff are gay. Everybody knows that in the city, which is not to accuse him of any sexual orientation, because he is a married man, and that's what he is, and he's not an evil man at all. He's just a naked politician who's completely distorted in terms of what he thinks the country's ready for. When he did that, do you know that there were 80 black and Chinese Christian pastors, ministers, reverends, who quietly met outside City Hall in a candlelight vigil to oppose his embracing homosexual marriage, and yet the shameful local newspaper did not cover their meeting outside City Hall. That is the blacks and the Chinese who opposed gay marriage. That's the kind of propaganda we face here in the Bay Area, Al, but we face it nationally as well. When have you last seen an Asian or a black or any other minority for that matter being shown for what they really believe in as opposed to what they want you to believe the minority believes in?
Mike, the media are blacking out all of the facts. For example, I mentioned we have former gays, plenty. I don't have any former blacks. We have plenty of former gays. But they want to listen to the Jesse Jacksons, the frauds, because they really support the status quo. And again, if you were doing an investigation, you'll find out they are on their payroll of usually white liberal groups or white corporations. So they are going to do what's in their interest, not what's in the interest of the black community.
Mm-hmm. Okay, tell you what I'm going to do for you, Al. I'm going to really give you trouble. I am going to give you a book that I hope you only walk around with in a plain brown wrapper. It's Psychological Nudity, My Savage Radio Stories, because the cover shows me and my dog, Teddy. And I'm sure you're going to have to walk around with it in a plain brown wrapper in your neighborhood. Al, stay on the line. You get a free copy coming your way starting tomorrow. It should be there in a few days. Steve in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Mike, the reason why the super rich tend to support Obama is because the super rich, by and large, have inherited their money. They inherited their money and they married into more money. The guy with $1 to $10 million, that's the type of number that somebody would earn, a hardworking guy like you or me, a guy who pays taxes. The super rich, they can always find ways to hide their taxes.
Let's deal with that for a minute. The super rich, like the Kennedys, who live on a trust fund. Trust funds, as you well know, are not taxed in the same manner. The money is put into a trust. They can withdraw a certain amount of money in that trust to live the lifestyle of the super rich without paying taxes on it. Dividends are also not taxed in the same manner as ordinary income. You know that as well. And many of the super rich live off dividends and on trust funds. So, of course, they don't care about taxes.
Absolutely, and also this is the same old argument that you get in upscale neighborhoods of the old rich and the new rich. The old rich don't like the new rich, and they tend to want to prevent the next generation from becoming rich.
Well, that may be true. All I know is that there's a point of diminishing returns with regard to taxation. There are plenty of people listening to this show and those who don't listen to the show, who have said that if Obama starts to tax the middle class, meaning anyone making more than $150,000, $200,000 a year, they will close their business rather than continue to work for the government. Now, that means millions of job losses, doesn't it? It means lots of money lost to the tax rolls. This is clear. It is understood by anyone who's worked in the real world. Obama has never run a business. Remember who Obama is. Obama is a community organizer, a law professor, which means he has lived in an Ivy League bubble. He does not know what it means to build and to run a business. And he doesn't understand what happened in the ex-Soviet Union or in any other country that embraced socialism. It was a business killer. It always has been a business killer. High taxation, high regulation destroys the business climate, and people tend to take fewer risks. It's really that straightforward.
Absolutely, and I'm really not worried about Obama for the same reason that you're not, because I know his ideas won't work, and it'll just be a disaster, and he'll be out of there before you know it.
Well, you could say his ideas won't work, but once they put his ideas into practice, how are you going to turn it back?
Well, I mean, you're gonna just have to ride through it for 4 years, and then hope that America wakes up and get somebody else in there that'll turn around the damage that he's done.
Well, I think you're more optimistic than I. How are you going to fix the damage, let's say, if he decides? The Supreme Court judged 3-4 months ago, as you know, the Second Amendment of the Constitution, the right to bear arms. It was the first time that the Supreme Court ever reviewed the meaning of the Second Amendment, meaning the right to bear arms. And they came out clearly 5-4 with the liberal wackos again trying to deny gun owners the right to protect themselves in this country. But that's only a 5-4. The Supreme arrogance of the Ruth Bader Ginsburgs, the David Souters, who think that they know more than the average person and that they have a right to take away basic freedoms from people, is a harbinger of what's liable to happen under an Obama regime. An Obama regime could easily replace some of the Supreme Court justices and turn this country into a direction that we may never recover from. Thank you for the call. I'm not as optimistic as you are that we can turn things around after 4 years. Of course the people won't accept what he wants. Of course the majority of Americans don't accept Marxism. Of course the majority of Americans would be repelled and repulsed by what Obama might do. If you just look at his policy statements, you'll realize that he's not in step with the average American. It's just been a great propaganda campaign, and he owns the media probably to a 99th percentile, to an extent unimagined in American history. And the big losers here, by the way, after this election, there is a scintilla of good news. The big losers after this election, either way, no matter who wins, the big losers will be the midstream media. They have lost virtually all credibility forever. The outright support for Obama by the midstream media has turned millions of undecided voters against the midstream media. They will stop buying their papers, as is already happening. They will turn off their television shows, as is already happening. And so the midstream media, as represented by this despicable creature called Andrea Mitchell, who makes my flesh crawl for reasons that I can't even describe to you. This woman is such a naked left-winger, married to the former man who ruined the economy, the former head of the Federal Reserve, Alan Greenspan, and for years was disguised as a so-called journalist for NBC with very few people realizing who she really was. This naked Obama slavish worshiper represents to me the worst of the midstream media, and she's not alone. They're the big losers. There will be big winners in the media after this election, and I will be the biggest winner after this election. I, Michael Savage, have clearly defined myself as a true independent, as opposed to the bartenders who belong in a white apron in Duffy's Tavern. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. The fact of the matter is, let's talk about the Proposition 8 in the state of California, which is homosexual marriage. The people voted on this before, and they said no to gay marriage. Then the homosexual lobby went and did an end run around the people. They shopped it to degenerate judges on the California Supreme Court, and five rotten judges said to the people, your votes don't count, let there be gay marriage. So the religious organizations, family-oriented organizations, said enough is enough. We're going to put it on the ballot again, and it's coming up on Tuesday, and Proposition 8 is being fought over very, very strongly. The Mormon Church put up a lot of money in favor of Proposition 8, and God bless them for doing it. And now the issue comes down to who's going to vote which way, and they're predicting this and that. And I personally think it's going to win again by about 61%, as it did. I mean, the same words that were passed in 2000 by 61% of voters in California, the majority of whom were Hispanic, says, yes, we want to protect marriage. So even if a Hispanic voter is a liberal in other ways socially, as they probably would be, when it comes to family values, they understand that homosexual marriage can only be bad for their children and for the future of their families. I mean, they understand the basics of reality. And they're not going to fall for the discriminatory language of the homosexual mafia that is being put forward by themselves, that it's equality and equal rights. It has nothing to do with equal rights. It has nothing to do with equality. It has to do with the survival of a society. It has to do with natural law. It has to do with sanity. And unless you are a family person, unless you have children, you can't really understand this. It's almost impossible to understand this. Unless you are a family person with children. Because until you've looked your children in the eyes and asked yourself what is good for them and what is bad for them, what is right for them and what is wrong for them, frankly, you are a deluded fool if you think you know what's good for children and you don't have any yourself. You may think you do, but you don't. You need to actually have one or two, and you need to have raised them and cared about them for 24/7 in order to know what's right and wrong for your children. And luckily for the state of California, the Hispanic people are by and large family people. And it's as simple as that. You pick up the Bible. The Bible is very clear on certain things. Now, I'm not a biblical absolutist. I've told you that. But when it comes to reproduction and it comes to male and female and animals, I'm pretty clear on that one. I'm pretty straightforward that male and female make babies. That anything other than that is a distortion of nature and a distortion of reality and an insult to God and an insult to religion, an insult to history, and an insult to children's brains. And the people know that. And I think they're going to vote their conscience, and I think they're going to vote yes on Proposition 8. I doubt that I'm wrong. I mean, again, the newspapers are saying it's neck and neck, and the people are split on it. These are all front groups for the same agenda. The state of California is owned lock, stock, and barrel by the Democrat Party and the extremist wing of the Democrat Party. The newspapers are worthless. You've got the Chronicle, which is losing $1 million a day. You've got the Los Angeles Times, which is bleeding, probably at a rate close to that, if not greater than that, yet they won't change their agenda. You've got the L.A. Times, which is holding a videotape of Obama saluting a radical Palestinian and insulting Jews that the L.A. Times won't release. The newspapers are a laughingstock to the average person. So when they say that this gay marriage referendum is split down the middle, they're lying. They're lying. They're propaganda ministries, and that's all there is to it. So there it is. Now, of course, the shame of this campaign and the big loser will be Jerry Brown. Once the people of the state of California realize that once a moonbeam, you're always a moonbeam, and that the man distorted the language of this proposition in order to placate the homosexual mafia, I believe his chance to become governor of the state of California is over. This originally was written in one way, but Brown rewrote it to say it eliminates the right of same-sex couples to marry. You understand that? Do you understand that? It was originally written to say only marriage between a man and a woman is valid or recognized in California. But Jerry Brown rewrote it because he knows people don't want to take something away from people. So he was very clever, Jerry Brown, when he rewrote the initiative to say eliminates the right of same-sex couples to marry. And many people say, well, I don't really want to take away a right of anybody. So once people come to understand that Jerry Brown, although he has, you know, let us say, pretended to have evolved as a centrist, is still a radical. Once they recognize he's still a radical, he will lose in his race to become governor again, as sure as I'm standing here. A person much more clever than him, also a Democrat, but not quite as radical as Dianne Feinstein. Now, although she's for this proposition, I don't think she's as wed to it as Jerry Brown will be forever. And I wouldn't be surprised if she doesn't use this against him in a subtle way without tying herself to it being used against him in the run for the governorship. But that's a long way from now. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. is the website. We can talk about this or the Proposition 2 animal cruelty bill measure, which I'm for. I know you think, how could that be? But I had spent over an hour on this. You would assume that because I'm an independent conservative, I would automatically be a lockstepper and say no on Proposition 2. But I said yes on Proposition 2 because I believe the humane treatment of animals makes us a more humane country and more humane people. It's as simple as that. And so I voted yes on Prop 2, and I advise you to do so as well. In that, I joined some of the most far-left whack job organizations in America, organizations I spit at. But I told you politics makes strange bedfellows. 1-800-449-8255. John, New York City, WOR. Go ahead, please.
Good evening, Dr. Savage. I was going to talk about the animals, but you seem to have left the subject. I left a message for you the other day about a very inspirational film which illustrates language borders and cultures. It's called An American Romance. It was made by King Vidor in the 1940s and starred Brian Donlevy. And it's a picture that I think that you would enjoy because it shows a European immigrant who didn't speak English, comes to this country, works hard to learn the language, works hard in a steel mill, and eventually founds his own automobile company.
And what is the name of the film?
An American Romance.
I will probably look into it. I have very little time. Another great movie along the lines of The Great American Dream is a fabulous movie called America, America, one of the great movies of its of all time. The reason it's not being offered as such is because the director was a conservative, not a communist. You see, he didn't join the communists during the McCarthy era, so his
Savage.
Movies...
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
So just to take a sort of a realist perspective, is that there's a lot of change going on outside of the court that, you know, the judges have to essentially take judicial notice of. I mean, you've got World War II, you've got the doctrines of Nazism that we are fighting against that start looking uncomfortably similar to what's going on back here at home.
So there's Obama in 2001 on Chicago Public Radio, saying that the country basically is a Nazi country. So if you understand this man's mindset, you understand the danger you're in if this man becomes president. John McCain slammed the Los Angeles Times today because they refused to release a videotape that the LA Times editors say show Barack Obama praising a Chicago professor who served as a mouthpiece for the PLO when it was a U.S.-designated terror group. Speaking to two Florida radio stations, McCain said that a double standard in reporting by the newspaper exists, and he said that if he were hanging out with neo-Nazis, he'd bet the tape would be made public. The LA Times says it is standing by its promise not to show the tape, which it got from an anonymous source. The newspaper, LA Times, of discussion, has also not provided a transcript of the 2003 farewell party for University of Chicago professor Rashid Khalidi. Now, who is he? Among others in attendance at the soiree were former Weather Underground founders William Ayers and Bernadine Dorn. McCain said, apparently this is a tape with a dinner that Mr. Ayers was at and also one of the leading spokespersons for the PLO, along with Obama. Now, why that should not be made public is beyond me, McCain said. He went on to say, if there was a tape with me and Sarah Palin and some neo-Nazi or one of those, you think that tape wouldn't be made public? Of course. Americans need to know, particularly about Ayers and also about the PLO. So hopefully there will be enough pressure on the LA Times that it will come out. But it's really unfortunate that we have to go through this, McCain continued. So there it is. The LA Times is holding back a tape, a videotape, that shows Obama, you hear this, in the company of a former PLO mouthpiece. Now, why is the LA Times doing it? Well, they have an excuse. They said that they didn't publish the videotape because it was provided to us by a confidential source who did so on the condition that we not release it. Oh, really? That's the Times editor, Russ Stanton. And he said, the Times keeps its promises to sources. I don't believe that at all. The fact of the matter is, this is a very serious tape. The people, the American people, have a right to know who Obama really is and who he is associated with. And for the LA Times to hold it back is indicative of why the LA Times is going out of business and why the investors in the LA Times made a bad bet. McCain slams LA Times for double standard and withholding Obama Khalidi tape. It is a real embarrassment, not only for the LA Times, but for the American people themselves to think that they are that naive that they can't watch this tape and decide for themselves. Should the LA Times release the tape, you decide. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. I certainly think they should. I mean, after all, you don't want a double standard in America, do you? You want a single standard. The Los Angeles Times is refusing to release a videotape that it itself says shows Barack Hussein Obama praising a Chicago professor who was an alleged mouthpiece for the PLO while it was a designated terrorist group in the 70s and 80s. The paper says the tape of the 2003 farewell party for Rashid Khalidi shows Barack Hussein Obama toasting his, quote, friend and dinner companion. Well, I'm asking you, should the LA Times release this tape? Share your thoughts on the Savage Nation by calling 1-800-449-8255. There are many other topics we could talk about, Prop 2, Prop 8, other than the presidential election. Let's go to San Diego. Donald, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, yes. Dianne Feinstein has been featured down here in No on 8 advertisements.
In other words, Dianne Feinstein is in favor of homosexual marriage.
Yes. She cites the fact that we are taking their rights away as one of her major reasons.
Well, we'd expect that from a didactic left-winger who is, of course, a hypocrite on virtually every level. That's not my point. She is not as closely tied to Prop 8 as Attorney General and would-be governor again, Jerry Brown. Jerry Brown rewrote the language of Prop 8 in order to confuse the voter, and that will come back to haunt him as sure as I'm sitting here.
Absolutely.
Thank you for the call. 1-800-449-8255. Stamford, Connecticut. Lou, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, Lou.
Hi, this is Lou from Stamford. How you doing, Michael? I just received your book today and just wanted to comment on the stream of consciousness as I was reading it. Just unbelievable descriptions. I'm a musician, so it reads like music to me. Just
oh, that's beautiful. I like that. Psychological nudity. It was written like jazz music. See, most of them are – these are derived from radio stories where they were told first – and in my own editing, which I edited this book, I tried to keep the flavor of my language and my syntax and my flow. I didn't want a New York publisher to turn it into a standard, you know, textbook kind of book, because I knew my listeners wanted to hear my voice in the book. And I thank you for that call, Lou. I appreciate it. Well, let me just talk about it for a minute or two, if you don't mind, okay? The style in this book can be seen as a distant ancestor of the first storyteller in a cave or the ancient Jewish prophets. Lawrence Stern later developed it as a literary form in Tristram Shandy, written in 1759. You don't know that. It was Lawrence Stern who wrote a series of books called Tristram Shandy in 1759, and he did so through a stream of consciousness. And I said, with these influences in mind, I've become known for my stream of consciousness radio stories, and this book captures some of these streams. That's it. It's different than any book you'll ever read. The electric blue saddle-stitched pants. I think some of these stories will live and become movies or whatever. You know, The Fly and the Tuna, Symphony Sid's story, tough high school geometry teacher, happy and sad cufflinks, Fat Pat and Tippy the dog, Tippy dies and is thrown in a garbage truck. That's a very popular one. Savage's childhood diet, prescription for a heart attack. It's amazing to me that I didn't die at 11 from the diet I had, which leads me to believe that everything I've learned as an alternative medical practitioner is true, which is that cholesterol is one of the greatest myths ever promulgated on the American people. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. I have an interview coming up you're not going to want to miss. Be here. Savage. Our next guest, Joel Mowbray, with Town Hall, has uncovered a story in an Ohio legislature race where the Democrats are attacking a candidate on his choice to serve a second tour in Iraq. Can you believe that? Joel Mowbray, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Michael, as always, thank you for having me here today.
The Demon Cats are actually attacking a veteran's record? What's going on here?
In the swing state of Ohio, what you have going on right now is a campaign tactic, Michael, that you just don't see often. You have a Democrat who's going around telling people that his Republican opponent went AWOL on the district. Now, what's the reason he says the Republican legislator went AWOL in the district? Well, it's because he went to serve in Iraq last year.
Are you kidding?
It was after being elected to the legislature, Josh Mandel got a call from the Marines asking him if he could return voluntarily because they needed someone who did intel to go to Iraq. And, you know, Josh Mandel says that He didn't join the Marine Corps to say no when my country called. So he decided to go, and he made sure the office was staffed, constituents were taken care of, and now you have a Democrat running around telling people that his opponent went AWOL because he decided to serve his constituents and all of us by fighting in Iraq.
So they are saying he went to Iraq for selfish reasons? That's insane.
Well, actually, the wife of the candidate, Barbara Belovich is her name, she actually told me in an interview that Josh Mandel was serving in a war zone out of personal ambition. Now, I asked her, how does someone go to a war zone, put his life on the line out of personal ambition? And she just replies very curtly, well, he certainly wasn't serving our needs. And Michael, you know, I want to say one other thing about this comment that Barbara Belovich, the wife of the candidate, made about Josh Mandel serving in Iraq out of personal ambition. I mean, first of all, this guy, Josh Mandel, had served in the Anbar province when things were going to hell in a handbasket back in 2004. So he saw pretty much the worst of it, the worst of any time in Iraq, in any place in Iraq. He was there. He saw it. So the notion that he would return out of personal ambition is a little silly. But also, and I looked into his past a little bit and got him to open up some, he's one grandfather he has is a Holocaust survivor. The other served in the U.S. Army in World War II. So for him, once he got out of college in the year 2000, he went and enlisted in the Marine Corps and then served the first tour back in 2004. So for him, this was when he was in the Marine Reserves and he was called up and served the first time in 2004. So for him, this was a very deeply personal decision, but also to honor his family heritage, which makes this notion of it being a personal ambition all the more distasteful.
How can they get away with this?
Here's the thing you have to understand about this Cleveland area legislative district, Michael, is that it overlies half of Dennis Kucinich's congressional district. So there are a lot of very anti-war types. Now, Josh Mandel, the candidate, steadfastly believes, and he will say till he's blue in the face, that it doesn't matter how someone feels about the war, he has found that most people support the troops. But one of the things that I realized in talking to the Democratic candidate against him is that if he's still using this line of attack so close to the election, he must have gotten some traction with it, right? That he must have had some people saying, well, you know, that's true. He did abandon us. But then again, maybe it's just that he feels that strongly about the war in Iraq or about Josh's service that he is sticking to that line regardless of its effectiveness.
They're going as far as saying Mandel won his position because of his name?
One of the things that has made a lot of people very uncomfortable, Michael, about my reporting on this Ohio legislative district is that the Democrat in this race was overheard talking in an audio recording that was made at a MoveOn.org-affiliated event, a group called Progressive Majority. And he was talking with his wife and somebody else. Now, his wife started out the conversation by saying that Josh Mandel's military service says that he has a greater obligation to, you know, George Bush than to his constituents. And then the husband, Bob Belovich, the candidate, chimes in, well, you know, the problem is people don't really know who he is. And when I was working against him 2 years ago, he has a blue sign, Mandel, Jewish name. This is treading on very, very dangerous territory when you have someone who's a Catholic, Bob Belovich, in a heavily Catholic district, talking about the Jewish name and the implications of his opponent being Jewish in that district.
So the implication is that he hasn't done anything with his first term?
Michael, obviously, the clear implication when you're saying he abandoned us and that Josh Mandel went AWOL by going to Iraq is that he somehow harmed constituents by not doing anything. Well, he was one of the two people who led the successful fight to divest the Ohio pension funds. We're talking, by the way, about, like, I think, over $100 billion total in those funds. They're huge funds. To divest from their holdings in companies doing business in the energy sectors of Iran and Sudan. Now, that's huge because, you know, people would say, oh, it's just one pot of money out of Ohio. That's true. But what it also does is it starts a chain reaction so that you have Ohio and then you get states like California and Florida. These pension funds across these states have real money. And once you start getting all these states doing it and then maybe getting other private investment groups to follow suit saying, you know what, we can also do that, then you start to have a real impact on the energy sectors in Iran and Sudan. And Josh Mandel was the person who helped lead the fight on that. And you know, it's amazing that he can do that in a two-year term and serve 7 months in Iraq.
I don't know where the media outrage is. It should be very high. I mean, he's an Iraq vet.
Well, interestingly, Michael, you'll be shocked to hear this. There hasn't been much media other than the blogs and the Internet, which has really grabbed onto this story. And, you know, I think that a lot of people I know, and by the way, people have been asking me how to find out more about this. Of course, you can find my call in the town hall, but also joshmandel.com. He has his information. And then bobbelovich.com if you want to see the Democrats' campaign website. Now, this race, I think, crystallizes a lot for people that, you know, they want to see a veteran who actually gets respect for his service. And most in Cleveland do seem very respectful. You know, the Cleveland Plain Dealer and other newspapers have commended him for his service. But this campaign tactic by Bob Belovich was just something that, you know, again, I think it had to get some resonance if he's going to be repeating it so close to the election. And I don't think that he's going to be able to win this. But remember, Josh Mandel is a Republican running in a district that is more than 2-1 Democrat, more than 2-1 Democrat. So he won last time by knocking on 20,000 doors, by having immense personal following in the district and people voting for him despite his party registration. And on a day like next Tuesday, when you have, just in the state of Ohio, a couple hundred thousand people turning out to the polls who've never voted before, most of whom are there to vote for Barack Obama. Well, that creates coattails for every other Democrat on the ticket. So that's, you know, something that Josh Mandel has to worry about. These attacks should backfire, but it's not clear that they have. I think I do know, based on the reaction to my story, that people were pretty outraged once they found out about this.
Joel Mowbray, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
That was great, Michael. Thank you. Thank you.
Savage.
Government gives them the drugs, builds bigger prisons, passes a three-strike law, and then wants us to sing God Bless America? No, no, no. Not God Bless America. God damn America. That's in the Bible for killing innocent people. God damn America for treating our citizens as less than human.
Now that, of course, is the future president's Reverend Wright. He sat in his church for 20 years. He claims he never heard any of this. And we're supposed to believe that, I guess. I don't believe in Santa Claus, so I guess I don't believe Obama. I believe he's a politician, and I believe he lies like all politicians. I know that's shocking to you liberals to believe that he lies. You think he's something other than a politician. And it doesn't matter to me that he's another politician. It's a very tough job being a politician. Let's start at the top. It's a tough job being a politician today. And I have no idea why anybody would want the job, to be honest, unless they are so power mad. It's the only reason I could think is that they're power mad. Because if you want to become wealthy, you can't do so as a politician until you're out of office. Then it's, you know, waiting. You know, if you're smart enough and you have the brains, and you can become rich in this country by working hard and investing in the right business and building it yourself, or providing a service that people want. I have no idea why anybody would want to be a politician, as I say, unless they're power mad. Now, since I'm not power mad, I don't really want to be a politician. I only want to be the reclusive talk show host that I have become. which matches my personality perfectly, because I spent many years as an isolated plant collector. I don't mean buying factories. I mean collecting botanicals. And then many years, and the years overlapped as a writer. I wrote, remember, over 20 books prior to becoming a talk show host. Whether you like it or not, they exist. In fact, my books are so well crafted that my first books are still in print. 1972, first published book was Earth Medicine, Earth Foods, on the North American Indians. I became fascinated by many of the incredible genius adaptations to our land by the North American people, I mean the North American Indian tribes. But that's neither here nor there. What I'm saying is something different. I think that if we do get our first socialist president, and what bewilders me is that he won't identify himself for what he is, what he clearly is. I mean, in Europe, since they want to use Europe as a model, all these liberals, can't you come out right and say we represent the Socialist Democrat Party? In Europe, they have a whole variety of parties. Why is he hiding that he's a Socialist Democrat, which is what he is? And that the Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid wing of the party is the Socialist Democrat Party of America. Well, the answer is because the American people would not accept that. It's still filled with yokels to them. But apparently they're not such yokels that you can lie, you know, that you can't lie to them about. You have to lie to them about it. The people actually know what a socialist is, even though they're not as sophisticated as the Obama wing of the party would like you to believe. And they're sophisticated enough to know what high taxes are and government regulations are, you know. That they know whether they're a farmer or a business person or a talk show host. We know what government regulation is, believe me. We know that an overbearing government is not good for freedom. We know that an overbearing government is the antithesis of the American way. That's all we know. We may not be as sophisticated as those who engage in certain behaviors that would make a sailor blanch. But we know pretty much what's good for us and what's bad for us. And we know that freedom is good for us, liberty is good for us, and slavery is not good for us. And if you think that a government telling you what to think 24 hours a day and punishing you for what you think if they don't agree with you is not slavery, then you are really a sick person. So if you want to vote slavery, go ahead. I'm not going that in that direction. Let's take the callers on the Savage Nation at 1-800-449-8255. And again, I invite you to visit my website, michaelsavage.com, for all of the stories and more that we have talked about today on the Savage Nation. You'd be quite surprised to see what's up there. Now, before I go to the callers, though, I said this to the guys during the break, the production staff. You know, my show is in many ways a virtual show. Many of you don't know this, but I have home studios. My shows are almost exclusively done out of home studios, and I have three or four of them, and I move around from San Francisco to a county outside of San Francisco. I'm never in one place 2 days in a row. I'm unpredictable because I don't know where I'm going to be the next day. I'm a very moody person, but I still like to be alone, and I work alone. And I believe that there's a tendency in America to work alone more and more and more. And I think the future is going to be people staying behind their walls, so to speak, staying behind their gates. I have a friend from L.A. who told me about some rich, powerful person who never leaves his estate. Never. He said he never leaves it. Well, except for medical or dental care. But even that you can get, you know, roving doctors or unless you're very sick to come to your estate. Now, I don't think you need an estate, but there are many people who are becoming more and more and more insular, not going out into the world because they don't like what's out there. They don't like what they see. They don't like what they hear. And that leads me to the next point. Let's say there's a socialist takeover of America if Obama wins, which is what it will be. The media, of course, is complicit in this, so they'll never acknowledge that it's a socialist takeover of the country because they themselves are involved in this great deceit that is going on. But the people know what's going on. As I say to you, what's socialism? It's the opposite of freedom. How do you know if it's socialism? It's called red tape and high taxation. That's all. Now, what do I mean by red tape? Well, red tape is government bureaucracy. What does that mean? It means that if you say something a government doesn't like, they call it a hate crime. That's what government regulation means. Now, who stands for that? Obama, Pelosi, Boxer, Feinstein, and the left wing of the party wants to control speech. Now, they don't say that. They say they're in favor of free speech, but that they only oppose hate speech. Now, how do they define hate speech? Anything that criticizes them is hate speech. That's called slavery. Do you understand that? What about overregulation of your business? That's a pretty straightforward one. A conservative believes in liberty and freedom, not overregulation. Now, of course, we need some laws and some regulations in a civil society, because man, if left to his own devices, is an animal and a beast. He will always do the wrong thing if he can get away with it. If it wasn't for environmental protections, we'd have totally polluted rivers, totally polluted air, and totally polluted lands, because that's what man does unless he's constrained and controlled. So thank God we have some regulations in that regard, or the waters would be contaminated, et cetera, and so forth and so on. So it's a matter of whether you like freedom or slavery is what it comes down to. And I think this election is pretty clear on which way to go. The McCain candidacy, as you well know, is not a very sterling one. He is a middle-of-the-road party hack. He's an apparatchik of the Republican Party. He is a shame, basically, as a human being for having compromised all these years and collaborated, in essence, with the liberal enemy, which he's done all of his life. And we can expect that, by the way, from him if he should win. Make no mistake about it. I mean, if he wins, if you think this guy is going to run from the right, rule from the right, you're insane. This guy is going to do more of the McCain-Kennedy stuff than you could ever imagine. Nevertheless, on certain issues and on certain freedoms, I'm gambling that this very sad candidate, McCain, will give us a tad bit more of our basic freedoms than would the outright socialist wing of the Democrat Party. Obama ridicules McCain for calling him a socialist. Everything Obama has said and written that's come out indicates he is a socialist. And, of course, he's spending $230 million on the airwaves. Tonight he's buying primetime. It's probably on already on the East Coast to fool you with a propaganda campaign unlike any ever seen in a free country, ever. So there you are. You have your choice. It's pretty clear. Don't bring up Palin. Do me a favor and Biden. Leave her out of the discussion. I am not a Palin fan. I believe she's a good person. I believe Palin is a great governor. I don't think she's ready for prime time, and I think it was a disastrous error for the Republicans to have picked her. They should have picked a young, viable male like Romney or someone along those lines who could have been a number two, that if, God forbid, this old guy, you know, goes the way of all flesh, you say, all right, at least they have their finger on the trigger and we know who they are. But this girl, this lady, let's face it, the big unknown. You talk about the unknown. They had one leading advantage over Obama, which was experience. And again, they shot themselves in the foot. They picked an inexperienced running mate. That doesn't mean that I don't like her or think she wouldn't be great at some level of government. She's already proven she is. She has already proven she has more experience than Obama. That does not make her a great candidate for the vice presidency. So on the other side, you have the party hack, the Democrat apparatchik right out of the Soviet Union, Biden, who's so in love with himself that he can't stop talking and apparently doesn't even think about what he says when he engages his mouth. Portland, Oregon. Jeff, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, thanks for having me on, Dr. Savage. I guess what I'd like to say is I think that the super rich have a lust for immortality, and that's why they behave the way they do. I mean, Bill Gates made a comment once about how he's a citizen of the world, and I think with the charitable trust they set up, it's about conceit and their hubris, and they want to they want the world to know.
Let me explain why they back Obama. They're buying protection. Make no mistake about it. The very rich are buying protection in backing Obama. And they feel that if he wins, they will have a certain protection from having backed him with, you know, that they can write legislation overnight with one line that benefits a specific business. You know that, don't you?
Yeah.
So, in other words, whether it's tax credits for building a factory in Washington State or it's tax credits for something else, I had a story on the show last week of what our Treasury Secretary did on a Sunday night. He wrote a one-liner into the new tax code that was out of the world, and it benefited the new president of Wells Fargo Bank but to the tune of $12 or $14 billion. With one stroke of a pen, the Treasury Secretary, who has no authority to do so, rewrote U.S. tax laws to benefit Wells Fargo Bank in their takeover of Wachovia. So this is an example of what you can buy in the United States of America by backing certain campaigns. I'll be right back.
Savage.
One of the problems of broadcasting from home is that if you do it as I do and you have your dog with you all the time, I mean, he barks when someone approaches the gate or he barks during the show, but, you know, you get used to it already. Teddy's, I think, a part of the character is background noise of the Savage Nation. I wish he could talk. I'd let him fill in for me one of these days. I wonder what he'd say. There's a great article that just came out by Thomas Sowell called Obama Win Would Be Historic Tragedy. And it's a very important article. Very important article. Thomas Sowell is one of the most brilliant journalists around. And I'm going to summarize some of it. He says an Obama win would be an historic tragedy. He says performances where Obama has nothing to show for his political career, either in Illinois or in Washington. Policies he proposes under the change banner have failed repeatedly in other countries. Politicians telling businesses how to operate, that's been tried in countries around the world, especially during the second half of the 20th century. It has failed so often and so badly that even socialist and communist governments were freeing up their markets by the end of the century. The economies of China and India began to take off into high rates of growth when they got rid of precisely the kinds of policies that Obama is advocating for the United States under the magic mantra of change. Higher taxes to spread the wealth around, as Obama puts it. The idea of redistributing wealth has turned into the reality of redistributing poverty. In countries where wealth has fled and a lack of incentives has stifled the production of new wealth, writes Mr. Sowell. Economic disasters, however, he writes, may pale by comparison with the catastrophe of Iran with nuclear weapons. Glib rhetoric about Iran's being a small country, as Obama called it, will be a bitter irony for Americans who will have to live in the shadow of a nuclear threat that cannot be deterred, as that of the Soviet Union could be, by the threat of a nuclear counterattack. Suicidal fanatics cannot be deterred. If they're willing to die and we are not, then we are at their mercy, and they have no mercy. Moreover, once they get nuclear weapons, that situation cannot be reversed. Is this the legacy we wish to leave our children and grandchildren by voting on the basis of style and symbolism rather than substance? If Barack Obama thinks that such a catastrophe can be avoided by sitting down and talking with the leaders of Iran, then he is repeating a fallacy that helped bring on World War II. In a nuclear age, one country does not have to send troops to occupy another country to conquer it. A country is conquered if another country can dictate who rules it, as the Mongols once did with Russia, and as Osama bin Laden tried to do when he threatened retaliation against places in the United States that voted for President Bush. But he didn't have nuclear weapons to back up that threat, yet. America has never been a conquered country, so it may be very hard for most Americans even to conceive what that can mean. After France was conquered in 1940, it was reduced to turning over some of its own innocent citizens to the Nazis to kill just because those citizens were Jewish. Do you think our leaders wouldn't do that? Not even if the alternative was to see New York and Los Angeles go up in mushroom clouds? If I were Jewish, I wouldn't bet my life on that. That's from Thomas Sowell. What the Middle East fanatics want is not just our resources or even our lives, but our humiliation first, in whatever sadistic ways they can think of. Their lust for humiliation has been demonstrated repeatedly in their videotape beheadings that find such an eager market in the Middle East. None of this can be prevented by glib talk, but only by character, courage, and decisive actions, none of which Obama has ever demonstrated. That's from Thomas Sowell, a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, Stanford University. And it's published by Creative Syndicate, Inc. So there it is. There's a man who says that an Obama win would be an historic tragedy. Bruce in Portland, Oregon, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael, how you doing? Michael?
I don't answer such questions, Bruce. Make your point.
Hey, I'm voting for Obama, and the reason why is John McCain, 72 years old.
Did you hear one word of what I just read from Thomas Sowell or not?
Hold on a second.
No, hold on. Did you hear one word of what I just read by Thomas Sowell, which says Obama win would be historic tragedy? Just please answer the question. Did you listen to one word?
You said it yourself. The guy could die.
Did you listen to what I just said? So you didn't hear a word of what he wrote. Is that correct?
Listen to me, because the guy could die.
Take a walk. you work for Obama. The country's filled with them. They're everywhere. They're like a virus. They're like a plague. They're like the invasion of the body snatchers. These people are paid to call radio shows and say, how you doing, Mike? How are you? They're just like the Palestinian hired in the Gaza Strip to cold call people in America. They didn't hear a word. The guy didn't hear a word, I said, because he works for Obama. That's all. 1-800-449-8255. Kenneth in North Carolina, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
It's a pleasure and a privilege, Dr. Savage. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I want to say
this is going to be the first election I've ever voted for what I call a Republican or a dummy crap. I've always been able to vote third party, but this year in North Carolina is just too close. And based a lot on your endorsement, I'm going to hold my nose and vote for John McCain because we just cannot have Barack Obama in the White House.
No, we cannot have the socialist, pacifist wing of the Democrat Party ruling the country in times like these.
We can't.
Socialism and pacifism have been tried before. Think the 1930s. Think Neville Chamberlain. If you say to me, who does he most approximate, stripping aside genetic appearances, rhetorically, he most approximates Neville Chamberlain of England in the late 1930s. That's who Barack Obama is. Let's strip away all of the rubbish. The man is a pacifist and a socialist. And that is not what we need in an age of an Islamofascism, is it?
You're very right about that. We've been dealing with these people for the entire existence of our country, and we've got to have a strong leader, much like Washington, much like Jefferson.
Right, and you're one of the few people who understand that Islamofascism did not get was not originated by Osama bin Laden. I have said repeatedly that the piracy off the Barbary Coast was so bad that the U.S. Navy had to be created to protect our merchant ships in the early 1800s. Who was doing it? The same pirates who are existing right now in Somalia. The same people who behead women. The same people who stone women who commit adultery. These throwbacks are still there. The throwbacks need to be stopped with force, not with rhetoric. And Obama doesn't know that because he's an egghead, an Ivy League egghead, who does not live in the real world. He's a complete fiction. Thanks for the call. Other than that, I have nothing to say about the differential between him and the old warhorse, John McCain. Obama win would be historic tragedy. That's one way to put it. There are other ways to put it. Remember this. They are the socialist, pacifist wing of the liberal Democrat Party that you have come to not understand because you've been brainwashed by the American media, who are also filled with the ranks of the media, are filled with pacifists and socialists in an age of Islamofascism.
Savage.